Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning and welcome to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Appreciate you listening to this program. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman.
Good morning.
Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Ray Pritchard.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well, Ray. And also Fred Jackson.
Good morning, everyone.
Good to have everybody listening. Walker, how can folks check us out on the internet?
They can visit our website, afr.net, afr.net. And by the way, when you're at our website, you can look at Operation Christmas Child and The Greatest Journey. We've been talking about the shoeboxes, which many of you are familiar with the past few weeks, but now we've transitioned to talk about The Greatest Journey. It's a 12-week discipleship program that Operation Christmas Child facilitates. So when you go to afr.net to find out more about the show, you can also read a little bit about that. You can download the AFR app on your smartphone or your tablet device. And lastly, the show is on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues.
Fred, what's leading the news?
What's leading the news? Well, President Trump last evening went on Facebook, and he delivered his a very vigorous defense of the fight that he is leading with regards to the results of the election, or the results that we know so far on the election. And he said he's going to continue to fight what he believes are many cases of fraud in the voting. He's very passionate about it. It was very interesting. As I say, it was on Facebook. It's been downloaded, apparently, and viewed hundreds of thousands of times on Facebook and shared by more than 60,000 Facebook users. Now, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Both Facebook and Twitter flag the president's posting as problematic. And needless to say, showing their partisan leading for Mr. Biden, with Twitter noting that Trump's claims about election fraud are disputed. You know, it's almost a consistent practice now by big tech. Anything the president says or the president's followers say or supporters are flagged. Joe Biden, I think, could say almost anything and it would not be flagged. And we go back to a theme that we've been talking about now for quite some time, and that is big tech is all in for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, we've seen that, but this is almost becoming expected. A commentator say that basically these companies talking about Twitter, Facebook, Google, and others are basically arms of the Democrat Party. Because they unilaterally, across the board, censor conservatives or cut off their messages or put up warning signs when trying to view conservative stories. So, there are alternatives, and some of them are growing pretty fast. I know Parler is one of them.
And the Parler is an alternative to what?
To Facebook and Twitter. And it's Dan Bongino. Of the Bongino Report. It's actually a part owner in that company, but hundreds of thousands of people are moving over there, so we do have some alternatives there.
Ray, what do you think about, by the way, do we have any clips from the president?
Yes, just got those clips in, and it'll be cut number two, Adam.
Okay. This may be the most important speech I've ever made. As president, I have no higher duty than to defend the laws and the Constitution of the United States. That is why I am determined to protect our election system, which is now under coordinated assault and siege. For months leading up to the presidential election, we were warned that we should not declare a premature victory. We were told repeatedly that it would take weeks, if not months, to determine the winner, to count the absentee ballots, and to verify the results. My opponent was told to stay away from the election. Don't campaign. We don't need you. We've got it. This election is done. In fact, they were acting like they already knew what the outcome was going to be. They had it covered, and perhaps they did.
And that was a portion of the president's 46-minute presentation last night.
Ray, what do you think?
Well, number one, I thought the president was very measured last night. He was passionate, but he was not over the top. He just laid out his case. And I think, you know, in some ways you could say you wish he had done it a week or two ago. I'm glad he did it last night because he is saying there are serious issues that need to be faced and need to be resolved. And what's amazing to me is what you guys have already noted, that the mainstream media is so much in the tank for the Democrats. It's not that they're going to answer the president. They're going to ignore him as if a 46-minute speech by President Trump never took place. I'm a little surprised that Facebook has let it stay up as long as they have. That's a good sign. Anyway, I give him 5 stars for what he said last night. I wish more Americans could hear it.
Fred, what was his basic, I already know the answer to this question, but still, what's the basic point or 2 points that the president was communicating?
I think what he is saying is he still believes he won the election, and he believes the concerns that he raised months before the election, in particular, the millions of absentee ballots that were issued, millions of them to people who did not request absentee ballots. He said over and over again in the months leading up to the election, this was going to be a problem because you have millions of these ballots floated out there and making it very possible. For example, this is one of the concerns that was raised before the election, that Democrat Party supporters working for the Postal Service could alter ballots, that people could go and pick up a ballot in a mailbox that was being sent and alter those, that make duplicate ballots, put Joe Biden's mark there, the ballot with an X for Joe Biden, and then feed those ballots into machines.
Yeah, to me, the strongest case that the Trump campaign has, and this has been my position from day one, is what is definitively provable. And what we know for certain is that various states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and a few others, mostly battleground states, they altered the Secretary of State in those respective states and the governor in some circumstances, unilaterally altered the way elections work. And then sometimes they went counter to election law in those various states, which created basically the train wreck that you're talking about, where you have ballots going out to people who are dead. You have just a big breakdown in the entire system and the way it traditionally works. All the accountability procedures are out the window. To me, that's the case that could be made to the Supreme Court in order to nullify some states who broke the law.
Yeah. Really, and to say it the way you just said it, Walker, is not to say there wasn't a problem with the Dominion software, because maybe there was, but that's so complex, right?
Right.
They're not going to be able to get to the bottom of that, I think, in time to make a difference in this election. It's a great question. We need to know that, but somebody, you got to be a super specialist to get down to the source code of a Dominion software company like that. But I think what you're pointing out, Walker, is the clear issue that these states, some of the leaders of these Secretary of States and some of those governors, broke the law of their own state, and they did it, and it favored the Democrats.
Yeah.
That needs to go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and they did it. They did it in front of, for everyone to see. I mean, they did it in the wide open. And the thing with the Dominion is, it wouldn't surprise me if there was software shenanigans going on, but proving that beyond the shadow of a doubt in this short window, and getting a court to basically nullify an entire state's vote, to me, that's a battle that I would be surprised if that was whatever happened.
Yeah,
as opposed to the first route I mentioned.
No, I agree with you. The first route is just clear. Right, the changed election day laws, particularly in Georgia and Pennsylvania, maybe other states, as you say, swing states. The Supreme Court will have to decide whether or not what to do about that.
Right.
Because the, as we said over and over and over again, the United States Constitution says that election procedures can only be regulated by the state legislatures.
That's right.
Of the states, not office holders like Secretary of State, Governor, even the Supreme Courts of the various states. So we'll see what happens with that. We are closing in on the December 14th certification date. Did I understand the president correctly about a week ago? And I don't know if he's changed his tune on this at all. He said if the states certify their votes and Joe Biden gets 270, he will concede. Is that what he said?
That's my understanding of what he said.
Fred, do you remember that?
That's my understanding as well.
Right, is that
right? Right, same.
Yeah. Same. That's what I understand. So he's pushing fast as he can in his team. I don't know who all is involved in his team. I'm talking about his legal team, except the two faces of the team are Rudolph Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, and what's the other? It's the lady.
Jenna Ellis.
Jenna.
Yeah.
Jenna Ellis.
Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis.
Yeah, yeah. And I know people who know her, and they say she's just top-notch, Jenna Ellis. And so, all right, well, we'll see where they go. They're traveling all over the country, Giuliani and Ellis, mm-hmm. traveling all over the country. They were in Arizona. They were in Pennsylvania. They are in Michigan, I guess, yesterday.
Yes.
Giving testimony, mm-hmm. Appearing before state legislatures, hearings, press conferences, et cetera, to talk about their evidence for voter fraud. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. By the way, Congressman Mo Brooks of Alabama will be with us at 10:45. Central Time. What's he going to be talking about, Walker?
Yeah, I wanted to get his feedback on how the electoral process works when it comes to the certification in various states, and then it has to go through Congress. Just get a brief overview of that, and then also get his feedback on these various lawsuits across the country.
Well, the president, just a few minutes ago, I guess it was, 9:22 a.m. Eastern Time, thank you, Representative Mo Brooks. Exclamation point. So whatever it is that the congressman is going to do or is suggesting, he's got the backing of the president of the United States. Fred, next story.
Yeah, we got some breaking news, and this is some good news. You may remember several days ago, the United States Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, basically shut down restrictions that Governor Cuomo in New York had put against churches and how many people could meet. Well, this morning they made a similar decision, but this case involves California and restrictions that were put in place there. You may remember the Code Enforcement Division for the City of Pasadena and criminal prosecutor threatened criminal charges, fines, and closure for being open for worship against the governor's orders and local health orders. And pastors were being threatened with fines, $1,000 fines against pastors, staff, and parishioners. Well, here's the breaking news. Thanks to efforts by Liberty Counsel, founder and chairman Matt Staver, the United States Supreme Court this morning issued the similar ruling that was ruled against New York just a few days ago. California cannot do that. They cannot put restrictions in place.
I think that deserves a round of applause right there.
Yeah. Here's what Staver had to say just a few minutes ago. Today's ruling by the Supreme Court provides great relief for churches and places of worship. The handwriting is now on the wall. The final days of Governor Gavin Newsom's color-coded executive edicts banning worship are numbered and coming to an end. It is past time to end these unconstitutional restrictions on places of worship. So this is great news. Both coasts now, New York and California, and I've got to think these restrictions that are in place all across the middle of the country, the Supreme Court decisions, they're now showing a pattern that just because whatever may be going on with COVID doesn't mean that churches lose their rights to assemble.
No, I'm looking for that story. You said it's breaking news.
Yes. Just out. I was just handed it by our reporter, Chris Woodward.
Wow.
Okay.
You know, This is the way you fight back and fight for liberty in the Constitution. And I'm really hoping that we'll start to see not just churches. I think churches have done a great job fighting back where the laws of the Constitution has been broken. But the business owners, and I know we've got some stories on that, but I'm really hoping some of these business owners band together too and start to sue these various governors because they're being hurt big time. Their livelihoods are being destroyed.
Yes.
In my view, over unlawful orders coming down from the governor's mansion.
Absolutely. Hey, do you want to hear some some passionate comments from one of those business owners? Happens to be a gentleman in Portage, Michigan. Listen to his frustration over these COVID restrictions. Cut number 10.
There was enough money to give every family. There was enough money to give every family in this country, $20,000 to go home for 2 months. They chose to give it to special interests and campaign donors, the Kennedy Space Center, and they abandoned us. So you could have given me money. I'd gladly walk away for 60 days and let this virus settle down. I'm not going to do it alone. Okay.
Are you going to continue to violate the state's orders and
this
stay open?
State order. This isn't an order. This is a conspiracy. This is a tyranny.
What do you want to tell other restaurant owners who...
Wake up. Stand up. This is America. Be free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you heard the frustration.
Yeah. Same thing's going on in other states. I was reading the other day where half the small businesses in... No, not half. What? A third of the small businesses in New Jersey and North Carolina were shuttering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For good.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Having to live through that? Now, how many...
How long does it take to come back, Tim, when that many small businesses are shut down? And I don't mean just for the owners, but for the economy of the state in general.
Yeah.
That you don't recover from that in 6 weeks.
No. And somebody said, I think in our meeting this morning that we had preparing for this program, that if all these government officials that are, drinking coffee and making edicts, right? And if they had to go without a paycheck for a few weeks, maybe their edicts wouldn't be as strong.
Yeah.
Be as heavy-handed.
Not to mention the hypocrisy of these leaders. And now we have at least 12 Democrat governors and mayors who are telling everybody you can't eat in restaurants, we're going to shut down outdoor dining, and then they're caught doing the very same thing.
Then they tell them don't travel, and then they travel.
Yeah, what was it, a governor or a mayor went down to Mexico and issued back an edict?
The mayor of, by the way, just real quickly before I forget, I was looking for the vote in the Supreme Court telling California you can't regulate churches.
Mm.
And I don't know what the vote is yet. So that must have just been announced the last few minutes, because I was curious to see how John Roberts voted on that one. Because if he voted 6-3, that's very good news. Because he was 5-4 on the New York decision, you remember. Same question. Does Governor Cuomo, can he shut down churches? And the Supreme Court said, no, it's unconstitutional. Well, 4 Supreme Court justices said, we're good with him shutting down churches. And including one of those was George W. Bush's appointment. And I know you can't always hold the president responsible for their Supreme Court decisions, because, once they get into their role there at the Supreme Court, they basically are independent, and that's the way it's designed to be. So I'm not blaming George Bush for John Roberts, but he has changed on us. So anyway, I want to say that I'm curious how the vote went for California. I'm hoping it was 6-3. Or maybe it was do you know, Walker?
Well, I'm just reading. I'm continuing to read as you guys are talking. This was a remand, we can check with Chris Woodward on this. This is a remand, I believe, back down to the Ninth Circuit with instructions to remand to the district court for further consideration in light of
the New York decision.
The New York decision.
You got you. They're not going to hear the same thing again.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't before the full court.
You're exactly right.
Whichever justice is assigned to that region, yes. or that circuit,
gotcha.
Sent it back to be reviewed.
Because, but basically they're upholding right. their own decision. 5-4 from a week ago, or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is great news because listen, we've said this over and over again, folks. And Samuel Alito said this, and others, Clarence Thomas, have said this. The United States Constitution, which is the law of the land, you cannot suspend it for a virus.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. And as we noted earlier, early on in this, we understood, everybody understood we were under a national emergency about a virus, which we saw wiping out people in Italy, for example, and China. And so everybody was worried, scared, and we wanted to help, you know, bend the curve. And so emergency orders, we understand, for a specific period of time, you know. But you can't indefinitely go on with these governors and mayors and so forth weekly doing what they're going to allow and what they're not going to allow, especially as it relates to churches.
Right.
Because we have a First Amendment freedom of religion, which trumps the virus.
Right.
And it trumps a mayor. And the Supreme Court of the United States has said it trumps a governor.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
So, you cannot do that. Now, if you want to make recommendations as a public official on what you think is best health-wise for your state or city, you want to make recommendations, that's fine. But you can't send sheriff's deputies into First Baptist Church in Los Angeles and say, we're shutting you down for violating public health orders.
Yes.
This is great news. That's why we clapped a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I wanted to get to that, but back to your point about the business owner, Fred, the story that you shared.
There's absolute frustration, and part of the frustration is that it seems to be applying to these smaller businesses, while the big box stores continue to make millions of dollars in extra profit. Because sometimes they're the only game in town that's allowed to open.
Why is that?
And they're just saying it's unfair. The liquor stores are allowed to open. In some jurisdictions, marijuana shops are allowed to open, but the church can't, and these small restaurants cannot. I mean, they're you heard the frustration.
Well, they're fighting back.
You heard the frustration there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Are you hearing about this where you live?
Well, it's a big deal all over the country, isn't it? That and by the way, Tim, to your earlier point, I think Dr. John MacArthur has been completely vindicated by the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
He took a stand
when
it was not popular to take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
He stood for his church, and thousands of pastors took courage because of him. I think the Supreme Court has completely vindicated his courage.
As did Calvary Chapel.
Right.
We interviewed that pastor, I've forgotten his name,
mm-hmm.
and others in California, not as high profile as those two gentlemen, but you're right, John MacArthur was the public and his church, Grace Community Church in California, were certainly on the front lines, and we are so happy for them and all the churches in California today. We shall return momentarily with more of today's issues on AFR. Fred's got some other stories to bring to our attention. And again, Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks will be with us at 10:45 Central Time. That's 15 minutes. Oh, right now? My apologies. The Congressman will be on with us in 3 minutes. So, good news. We'll be back to talk to him. Stay with us.
King of the Wild Frontier.
The music's free. I know we call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
ding, ding.
Yes.
Oh, really?
That's correct. What, giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you want a cheeseburger without cheese?
Hold the cheese.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, we've announced our dates for our spiritual heritage tours for 2021. We'll be going in June and we'll be going in September. And folks are already signing up for these wonderful Christian heritage experiences. Now, we're going to be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Wow. The history there is phenomenal. You're going to see so much when we visit those three sites. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. and George Washington's Mount Vernon. These are two separate tours, but they're back-to-back in case you want to do both of them. So again, those are in June and September 2021. People are already signing up. So if you want to be a part of these, the information is available to you at spiritualheritagetours.com. SpiritualHeritageTours.com. Everything's there.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. A new study released by the state of Tennessee indicates that less than 2% of China virus cases came from people who had eaten in a restaurant. In other words, one of the safest places for you to be in a global pandemic is your local diner. But instead of cracking down on the super spreaders, local health departments are shutting down restaurants, putting thousands of people out of work. So why aren't the elected leaders in Tennessee putting a stop to the tyrannical rule of these unelected health departments? Governor Bill Lee addressed that question during an interview on radio station KWAM. He says that as governor, he has no control over the health departments. They're allowed under state law to operate without any accountability. Governor Lee says his hands are tied. There's nothing he can do. But that's not exactly true. The governor does have a bully pulpit, but instead of using the bully pulpit, Governor Bill Lee has given in to the bullies. Be sure to download my free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim with Ray and Walker and Fred. We thank you for listening again to AFR. Walker, our guest is?
Yeah, Congressman Mo Brooks out of the 5th District of Alabama. Congressman Brooks joins us now. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Congressman. Tim here. By the way, what's your hometown? Where are you from?
Huntsville, Alabama.
Huntsville, the 5th District. So, thanks for being on with us. Tell us, the president just recently, by recently, I mean in the last hour or so, sent a tweet out thanking you. What's he thanking you for?
I just gave a forced speech emphasizing that far too many voters and people in the news media can't see the forest for the trees. The bottom line is there has been massive voter fraud in this election, and the biggest cause of voter fraud is voting by illegal aliens and non-citizens. Many people don't realize it, but in 1993, Democrats jammed through Congress the National Voter Registration Act that makes it illegal for voter registrars to require proof of citizenship before allowing illegal aliens and other non-citizens to register to vote. So that just opens the door. Why'd the Democrats do it? Because it makes it easier to steal elections. Fast forward to October 22nd of this year at the presidential debate in Nashville, Tennessee, where Joe Biden promised illegal aliens that he would give them amnesty and citizenship if he's elected president of the United States. Now, I don't know how large the block vote of illegal aliens is, but it was big enough for Joe Biden and his team to make sure that on national TV, illegal aliens knew that if they voted for Joe Biden, they would be rewarded with amnesty and citizenship if he is elected. That's a huge inducement for millions upon millions of foreigners who are illegally on American soil. When I say millions upon millions, Census Bureau in 2010 said about 11 million. Yale came out with a study a couple years ago that estimated 23 million illegal aliens on American soil. That's a big number. And that was the target of the president's speech in the debate when he offered citizenship and amnesty to illegal aliens if he wins.
Congressman Brooks, this is Walker. Tell our listeners the potential paths to victory that the Trump administration has, or the Trump campaign has, and that they're litigating. I mean, according to the Constitution and how our process works, what are some ways to rectify this in the next few weeks?
No question it's an uphill challenge. No question that the judicial system is totally inept and inadequate for handling this process. The judicial system is not designed to be able to give justice to an election contest of this nature and this magnitude. And that is why, in large part, the writers of the United States Constitution gave final and total authority to the United States Congress to determine the winner of election contests for the House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the President of the United States. So that's the process. It comes to us. We can accept or reject the Electoral College submissions of any state. Certainly there have been efforts to do that in the past, so it's not novel. By way of example, in 2017, House Democrats objected to the submission of the Electoral College votes of Alabama, Georgia, and a number of other states who voted for Donald Trump. The key is going to be mustering the number of votes needed on the House and Senate floor to reject the Electoral College submissions of states who have election systems that are so badly flawed they're not worthy of trust and therefore should be rejected.
Congressman, Tim here, just curious, these illegal aliens that are in the United States, how do they vote exactly?
Well, they go to a polling place and they vote just like anybody else. All they got to do is carry their voter registration card with them that they illegally obtained, that voter registrars are barred by law from not giving to illegal aliens, and boom, they cast their vote. It's that simple. It's really outrageous. I don't think very many people realize it.
No, I didn't realize it was as easy as you just described it.
Democrats have made it illegal, repeat, illegal, under Section 5 of the National Voter Registration Act, illegal for voter registrars to require proof of citizenship of foreign-born persons.
Yeah. Hey, have you written anything on this, or where can people go to get more information on what you're doing, what you're calling for?
I just gave a floor speech on it.
Is that on your Facebook
page?
About
an hour ago. We're going to send out a news release on it shortly.
Okay.
I don't know if you watched it on C-SPAN.
Okay.
You might have got a copy of the speech from my staff before this show in order to prepare for it, although you might not have had enough time to review it yet. But that gives all of the detail and all of the law.
Okay, so we're talking to Congressman Mo Brooks, 5th District of Alabama. He's the one that gave the speech that it will be on the Internet, on his, check out his pages, his Facebook pages and other things. Ray, did you have a question for the congressman?
Congressman, as you're looking around at your Republican colleagues, it seems to me it takes a great deal of courage for you to do what you're doing. What level of support are you finding among other Republicans to take a stand in favor of electoral integrity?
I'm getting significant support from conservative members of the House of Representatives. Keep in mind that our own GOP conference, we have a liberal wing, a moderate wing, and a conservative wing. The conservative wing gets it, okay? They see the forest. They're not distracted by individual trees, and they see the magnitude of this problem. And so I would say right now there are double figures, numbers of members of the House of Representatives who want to fight this fight. Of course, we need more, but it's a good start. Mm-hmm. We also need help in the Senate for us to trigger a House floor vote and a Senate floor vote under the 12th Amendment to the United States Constitution to reject, I should say, Article 1, Article 2, and the 12th Amendment of the United States Constitution, along with Title 3, U.S. Code 15 and 17, in order for us to reject a state's Electoral College submission. You have to have a written objection that includes at least one member of the House and one member of the United States Senate. And I'm willing to be that member in the House of Representatives, and quite frankly, I believe there'll be a number of people who will jump on board in this fight because we understand how important it is to eliminate voter fraud and election theft, and also, for that matter, to prevent socialists from taking over Washington, D.C. This might be our last best chance in which to do it. So that's what I'm doing. What voters like you can do is contact your congressmen, contact your senators, and demand that they join in this fight and let them know in no uncertain terms that if they don't, you're going to remember that next time they're up for election.
Hmm. Congressman, thank you so much for what you're doing and appreciate you being on with us on American Family Radio. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Y'all have a blessed day.
Okay, you too. That's Congressman Mo Brooks. Well,
that's gutsy, Tim. It's gutsy for. It's so easy to go with the tide, and he is taking a stand, and I think also in the media taking a lot of heat. But you can tell. I don't think he's going to back down at all.
The other thing is he's doing everything he's doing is lawful and constitutional.
Right.
Yeah. The process. Absolutely.
Right. He's not asking you to take up arms and. You know what I'm saying? And or do something
right. Wrong. He's saying let's just take the Constitution.
Yes, let's take advantage of the process here because the reason that the process exists is for people to express grievances in a peaceful manner.
Yeah.
An orderly manner. And so that's what he's advocating for, and I admire him.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are shocked by some of the things he just said. Number one, the Democrats passed a law that people do not have to prove their citizenship to vote. Yeah. I mean, this is absolutely amazing.
Listen. As we've said before, this ain't your grandpa's Democrat Party. Mm. Okay? These people that make up the Democrat Party in our country today, the leadership and really, I'm beginning to believe it's the rank and file as well. If you support and follow the Democrat Party, they don't believe in keeping anybody out of our country. All right, they're not for borders at all. Mm-hmm. They are against ICE, the immigration enforcement agency. They want to dismantle ICE. Joe Biden, the Democrat candidate for president, some call him president-elect, he said he's not for detaining anybody. I'm not making this up. No, right. So you don't detain them. You let them through and you give them, you know, a Subway coupon and hope they come back.
Yeah.
You know, to some court that they're supposed to appear for. Anyway, what I'm saying to you is you have one party that's for law and order and control of the border. You have another party who says to control the border is racist.
Right.
And also, if you remember that in the Democrat primary, all the candidates raised their hand when said, do you want the government, federal government of the United States to pay for free medical healthcare for anybody who comes here illegally, and all of them raise their hands.
Yep.
So the enemy's within.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Our country. Mm-hmm. It's people who want to tear down our society, basically. And our I've heard other who was it that what's the conservative talk show host?
Mark Levin.
Not Mark Levin, Savage.
Michael Savage.
Michael Savage. He used to have a saying talking about, if you don't have borders. Borders, language, what is it? Culture, I think he would say, something like that.
Right.
In other words, right, if you don't have borders.
Right. You don't have a country. Really? You don't have a country, right?
You don't have borders. And Democrats, by and large, in this country, and their people at the top officials in the Democrat Party, they don't believe in borders. Now, they'll give you some talk about, we need to do this and we need to do that. But they're not. If you're not for detaining anybody, like Biden said, and I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't tear down the wall, try to tear down the wall that has been built there. But President Trump has also done an excellent job of brokering deals with Mexico and with some of these Central American countries that keep those folks there, right? And keep them from coming here illegally.
Yes.
Anyway, so it's unbelievable that a major political party in our country don't believe in borders for all practical purposes, but that's the way it is. They're pandering, hoping to get Hispanic people to vote for them and by the millions because they think most Hispanic people believe also in no borders between the U.S. and Mexico. Mm-hmm. Unless you're going into Mexico, in which Mexico cares.
Right.
You know, they're not big on people violating their borders. But anyway, that's what they hope for. Ironically, President Trump got a higher percentage of Hispanic votes than
2016.
Other Republican candidates in the past. Fred, next story.
Yeah, along the same line, our guest just a few moments ago talked a bit about the divide in the Republican Party. And that's one of the uphill battles that conservatives within the Republican Party face. Rich Lowry, Tim, you sent this story out last night, basically outlining that other Republicans who are not really good supporters of the president need to take note of what happened over the last 4 years, that this president, President Trump, built high numbers. 11 million more Americans voted for President Trump this time around than in 2016. And Lowry outlines some of the things that these rhinos, Republican in name only, ought to take note of. Number one, he says, Trump showed that social conservatives are the strongest part of the Republican coalition and that the party's cultural conservatism is more naturally appealing to working-class voters than its economics are. I think that's a really critical point, that even amongst, whether it's African-Americans, Hispanics, they are hardworking, blue-collar, white-collar people who believe and stand against abortion, who stand against homosexual marriage, and all of those sorts of things, and that the liberal wing of the Republican Party needs to take note of that, because if they start to move to the left in the wake of whatever happens in this election, if the Republicans think they can compete with the Democrats by moving to the left, they're making a huge mistake.
I think that day's about over. That was a problem prior to President Trump, Walker.
Right.
But I don't think that's a problem. Yeah. That's going to be as much of a problem within the Republican Party any longer.
Yeah.
Because we've seen the clear divide. You can't reason with these Democrats.
Yeah. No, the Democrats don't want anything to do with Republicans, no matter how conservative or liberal you are. So, yeah, they're not there. I mean, there's even the huge divide in the Democrat Party.
But a rhino would be defined as a Republican who works with the Democrats to further their agenda more than they should.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. No, I think that's accurate. And I think
who's out there who fits into that category any longer? Mitt Romney.
Yeah, maybe Mitt Romney. But the I think what the Democrats have done by moving so far to the left, they've even isolated the rhinos.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Some of the Republicans who used to work with them.
Lindsey Graham was a rhino to most of us, right? Yes. Yes. Ray? Mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham was a rhino. Now he's a hero.
Mitch McConnell was considered a rhino.
From rhino to hero. That's
now good. I'm going, go, Mitch, go.
Yeah.
Huh? Mitch McConnell got Amy Coney Barrett through. He got Brett Kavanaugh through. He deserves credit for that.
Absolutely.
But let's face it. 4 years ago, we were sitting here going, man, you can't trust McConnell or Lindsey Graham. Am I right?
Well, we weren't sure about Trump. We didn't know
when he came in.
We didn't know what we were going to get.
And then, pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
That the president has turned out to be a solid conservative on most all issues, certainly on life, liberty, religious freedom.
Israel.
Protecting our country on Israel, on patriotism, those kinds of things, and many other things. You're listening to Today's Issues. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, another thing I like what Lowry had to say. He said, next, referring to President Trump, he demonstrated that the GOP must be unabashedly anti-woke party, must not be afraid to publicly speak for truth, and not try to appease the far left.
Yeah, again, he's lauding President Trump. Rich Lowry is in that piece in the National Review and saying that has served to give other political leaders, namely Republicans, the guts to stand up and fight in the culture war.
Right.
What he's talking about there is, you remember when the woke crowd, said that people should be, that professional athletes should be kneeling during the national anthem as to show disrespect to the flag and our country because we've have an incident of racism or police brutality somewhere in America. Therefore, are three or four places in a country of 330 million people. Therefore, you should disrespect the flag and the service of the people in our country. And President Trump said, that's unpatriotic. I don't support that. Mm-hmm. If those kneeling players worked for me, I'd fire them.
Yeah.
Well, that takes some courage to say that kind of thing.
Yep.
Because he was roundly, because that's racist. That's whatever. Mm. That's a king, whatever they said. I mean, what Rich Lowry is saying, those kinds of statements by the president, President Trump, he would have been probably the only one that would be so bold as to say things like that. What I think a majority of people were thinking in this country against wokeness, President Trump says out loud.
Yeah, President Trump fighting back against the political class, I think, emboldened others who have been afraid to do so. Because voters have been wanting and desiring a politician who will fight for their values and what they say they're going to go to Washington.
Also, he supported the law and order and the police, and as they've been under siege, right?
Yeah.
Police have been under siege. And the president stood up for law enforcement and the police. And so I think that's another thing. A lot of politicians, they want to wait and see, well, how do I go on this one? Maybe I can criticize the police and try to stand for the unarmed black man. I need to stand for him, too. I need to stand, they try to split the difference. I'm
right.
And so, go ahead, Fred.
All right, next story. And it's one of these stories because of so much going on out there you may not have heard. Yesterday, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer go out there before the microphones and say, we're willing to make a big compromise to try to get another COVID aid package out there. You will remember, for several months earlier this year, Nancy Pelosi said, I'm not moving. I want a $2 trillion package. Nancy Pelosi, who hasn't missed a paycheck yet, was saying that. So yesterday, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, they come out and they say, We're going to make a big compromise. We're going to go down to $900 billion. Now, that sounds really good, but there's some context here that needs to be added. $900 billion is still a whole lot of money. Mitch McConnell in the Senate says he doesn't want to move off of $550 billion. And here's the reason why. Kevin McCarthy, House Minority Leader, was on Fox and Friends this morning. Listen to what he has to say. Cut number 7.
There's $138 billion that's already appropriated that is sitting there for small business workers, but Pelosi won't let that go forward. There's more than $100 billion that's already been appropriated that would go to states that help them with their schools and the unemployment and others. We can do this in a systematic way to help those who need it with not adding more money because we've already have the money. The Democrats won't allow it to be spent.
I hope everybody understands the reason that money has been held up is Nancy Pelosi. She has refused. This is money that was designated in earlier packages to help small business get through this tough time, to help schools get through this tough time. She has refused to release that. As I say, Nancy Pelosi, who hasn't missed a paycheck yet, Chuck Schumer, they refused to release this money.
On what grounds, Fred, are they saying they're not going to release the money?
They don't want to release. They don't want to release that money because that would reduce some of the pressure on them. So here's the reality, folks, what's going on. They've been holding money up to help people who have lost their jobs during this critical period in order to make political points. Now, after the election, they're saying we can compromise, but they're not really compromising because really what they want to do with that extra money is help bail out Cuomo in New York, help bail out Newsom in California. That's what's going on here.
Yeah, that's the driver. And that's why you think about this and you go, why can't Schumer and Pelosi just agree to something with McConnell and the Republicans? It's because President Trump has said, and Mitch McConnell, they've said, we are not bailing out Democrat-run states who had massive deficits before COVID.
Yes.
And Nancy Pelosi and Schumer are holding out because they know this is the chance to bail out these states.
Yeah, but it did hurt her in the... And the Democrats, I think that hurt them in the November 3rd election.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Did you know 27 House of Representative races were listed as toss-ups? And the Republicans won 27.
Yes.
Of 27. So I want a voter recount. Because what are the chances of that happening, right?
Right.
The 27 out of 27, the reason those were all different independent races all over the country, but the reason the Republicans won, a lot of people think, is because of Nancy Pelosi is so unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
And so she held up an agreement with the White House prior to the election for relief money to be distributed across the country because she didn't want President Trump to get credit for that.
Yes.
Because she thought, well, if he gets credit for that, people might vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just hold it up.
In any sane universe, Tim, that would have cost her job, right?
Yeah.
And she would have been voted out of office. She's holding hostage small businesses and families that are struggling to make ends meet to make some cheap political point against the president.
Yeah. And I didn't know this money was sitting there still. Whatever it is,
we're talking almost close to $300 billion in those two pots.
Yeah, I think it's part of the payroll protection program.
Yep.
The money that hasn't been allocated, hasn't been used.
Mm-hmm. Just sitting there.
We printed so much money, we can't even spend it all. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine having $150 billion in your checking account that you don't know where to spend it on?
I tell you, my friends, I don't know if those of us, maybe Walker will, listening will be around when the walls come crumbling down, but I don't know if I'm being biblical here, but there will come a day.
Well, you're
there will come a day somewhere out there in the future where we can't print any more money.
Right. Can't spend like this forever.
No. Can't be handing out $2 trillion every 6 months. Huh?
No.
You can't do that. Unless you can completely and utterly defy the laws of economics.
Right.
But I don't know what the world looks like when it all comes crumbling down. But it's out there in the future somewhere. So more happy news, ladies and gentlemen. More happy news after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.